Hello and welcome to the Pediatric Critical Care Medicine Audio Abstracts. I'm Dr. Erin Bennett, and on behalf of PCCM, I'm happy to present this audio recording of the research abstracts that appear in this month's issue. Let's get started. Abstract 1 is a featured original research article by Ossies et al. Pediatric Rapid Ultrasound for Shock and Hypotension Phenotype Differentiation in the Emergency Department, Evaluation of Feasibility and Reliability in a Malawi Cohort. Objectives: to evaluate the feasibility, reliability, and diagnostic implications of performing the pediatric rapid ultrasound for shock and hypotension, or PRUSH, in children with undifferentiated shock upon hospital presentation in a low-resource setting. Design: prospective observational study from February 2019 to December 2019. Setting: pediatric emergency department of a large academic referral hospital in Blantyre, Malawi. Patients: children 2 months to 16 years old with shock upon presentation to the pediatric emergency department. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results: 30 children with shock were enrolled, of whom 14 died. The pediatric rapid ultrasound for shock and hypotension was performed upon admission to the emergency department before administration of an IV fluid bolus. The pediatric rapid ultrasound for shock and hypotension was performed within a median time of 11.5 minutes, and 92.3% of the image frames in 4-second video clips were interpretable. Images were scored by 2 independent reviewers, and the qualitative and quantitative assessments were compared and showed positive correlations as follows. 1. Qualitative assessments of cardiac performance versus left ventricle ejection fraction and fractional shortening measurements, with an R equal to 0.684 and R equal to 0.616 respectively, both with a p-value less than 0.05. And 2, qualitative assessment of inferior vena cava or IVC collapsibility versus IVC collapsibility index, with an R equal to 0.47 and a p-value less than 0.05. The inter-observer agreement between cardiac and IVC qualitative assessments yielded a kappa statistic of up to 0.85 for cardiac views and 0.275 for IVC collapsibility. Both reviewers applied a novel algorithmic flow diagram to diagnose the shock phenotype. In 23 of 30 children, the flow chart could be completed, which suggested either hypovolemic or distributive shock as the most common phenotype. Conclusions: in a Malawian pediatric emergency department, the pediatric rapid ultrasound for shock and hypotension was feasible and qualitative assessments were reliable. This 2019 proof-of-concept test provides a basis for further external validation of the pediatric rapid ultrasound for shock and hypotension and our algorithm for identifying shock phenotypes, which may lead to individualizing care of children presenting with shock in low-resource settings. Abstract 2 is a featured original research article by Basu et al. Adjunctive corticosteroids for hypotension in the pediatric cardiac ICU, single-center retrospective study from 2020 to 2021. Objectives: to characterize adjunctive corticosteroid use and associations between any exposure or cumulative dose and outcomes in pediatric cardiac surgical cases. Design: a retrospective cohort was admitted over 24 months from January 2020 to December 2021. Setting: single-center cardiac ICU or CICU in a quaternary hospital. Patients: descriptive analyses of all patients receiving hydrocortisone for hypotension. Further comparative analyses were restricted to postoperative infants less than 12 months old exposed to corticosteroids versus not, including propensity score, inverse weighted, and matched analyses. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results: we examined associations between cumulative hydrocortisone dose and outcomes, including severe infection. Overall, 154 patients of all ages received steroids, 91 were post-surgical. Median cumulative hydrocortisone dose was 10 mg per kilogram with an interquartile range of 6 to 21.2 mg per kilogram. Greater cumulative dose was associated with higher adjusted odds of severe infection at 1.08 with a 95% confidence interval of 1.03 to 1.12. For comparative analyses, we identified 403 infants, including 68 with postoperative corticosteroid exposure. Propensity scores based on multiple factors, including peak modified vasoactive inotropic score or modified VIS excluding milrinone, compared outcomes and hemodynamic response with quantification of rate of modified VIS fall from peak among 55 matched pairs. We failed to identify a difference in rate of modified VIS fall between non-steroid and steroid recipients. negative 0.162 with an interquartile range of negative 0.228 to negative 0.053 versus 0.160 with an interquartile range of negative 0.3 to negative 0.046 and a p-value equal to 0.674. Conclusions. In our CICU cohort receiving adjunctive hydrocortisone for hypotension, we failed to identify a consistent signal regarding outcomes and rate of modified VIS fall. Considering potential side effects, these data suggest prospective study is needed to better define the use of such treatment. Abstract 3 is a featured original research article by Nellis et al. Massive Bleeding in Children with Cancer or Hematopoietic Cell Transplant, International Multicenter Retrospective Study from 2017 to 2021. Objectives: to characterize the epidemiology and management of massive bleeding events in children with cancer and or hematopoietic cell transplant. Design: multicenter retrospective cohort study. Setting: 19 pediatric hospitals in Europe and the United States. Subjects: children ages 0 to 21 years old with malignancy and or hematopoietic cell transplant and massive bleeding admitted from January 1, 2017 to December 31, 2021. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Demographics, oncologic history, laboratory values, interventions, and PICU outcomes were collected. 152 bleeding episodes from 135 patients were analyzed. The median age was 7 years old with an interquartile range of 2 to 14 years old. 43% or 58 of 135 were female sex. 19% of children or 26 of 135 had death attributable to hemorrhage. 40% had solid tumors and one-third had undergone at least one hematopoietic cell transplant. The majority of bleeding events occurred in the PICU, 81 of 152 or 53%. The median platelet count at time of bleeding was 52 with an interquartile range of 24 to 115. Median prothrombin time was 18.5 seconds with an interquartile range of 15.2 to 24.8 seconds. The median activated partial thromboplastin time was 42.2 seconds with an interquartile range of 33.2 to 56 seconds. And the median international normalized ratio was 1.51 with an interquartile range of 1.21 to 2.11. To treat these bleeding events, 148 of 152 children, or 99%, received RBC transfusions, 126 of 152, or 84%, received plasma transfusions, and 132 of 152, or 88%, received platelet transfusions. Less than one-fifth received hemostatic medications. 77 of 152, or 52% of children, received high plasma ratios, and 73 of 152, or 49%, received high platelet ratios. Pulmonary bleeding, oral or nasal bleeding, and receipt of prothrombin complex concentrate were each associated with greater odds of death attributed to hemorrhage. Pulmonary bleeding had an odds ratio of 5.44 with a 95% confidence interval of 2.25 to 13.171 and a p-value less than 0.001. Oral and nasal bleeding had an odds ratio of 3.3 with a 95% confidence interval of 1.2 to 9.09 and a p-value equal to 0.021. Receipt of prothrombin complex concentrate had an odds ratio of 3.24 with a 95% confidence interval of 1.18 to 8.93 and a p-value equal to 0.023. Conclusions. Children with malignancy and or hematopoietic cell transplant have a high mortality rate from hemorrhage despite being hospitalized at the time of their bleeding event. The majority of children received balanced resuscitation. Definitive trials are needed to determine optimal hemostatic resuscitation practice in this population. Abstract 4 is a clinical investigation article by Caffarelli et al. Focal cerebral injury in pediatric extracorporeal life support, timing in relation to cannulation or other circuit events in a single center retrospective series from 2015 to 2023. Objectives: to review the timing of extracorporeal life support or ECLS related focal cerebral injury in relation to circuit interruptions in children and young adults. Design: retrospective study from January 1, 2015 to December 31, 2023. Setting: single center academic children's hospital. Patients: children and young adults younger than 21 years old who had neuroimaging during or after ECLS. Multiple ECLS runs in individual patients were analyzed as distinct runs. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Focal cerebral injury was radiographically defined as lateralized ischemia or hemorrhagic parenchymal brain injury greater than 1 cubic centimeter or as subdural hemorrhage causing midline shift. Timing of clinical focal cerebral injury documentation was abstracted from chart review and based on times of new onset focal neurologic examination findings, focal electroencephalography findings, or incidental discovery on imaging. In instances of focal cerebral injury, electroencephalography reports and inpatient progress notes were reviewed to identify electroencephalography-related timing of focal cerebral injury. Institutional ECLS registry data were used to identify times of circuit events, IDEST cannulation, decannulation, and circuit interruptions. The probable time course of focal cerebral injury after circuit events was evaluated in the ECLS runs with an image diagnosis of focal cerebral injury and summarized using cumulative distribution with 95% confidence interval. In 101 ECLS runs in 94 patients with brain imaging, 20 had focal cerebral injury, ischemic stroke in 12, intraparenchymal hemorrhage in 6, and subdural hemorrhage with midline shift in 2. 18 focal cerebral injuries were documented within 48 hours of a circuit event. Among 13 focal cerebral injuries with electroencephalography recording at the time of focal cerebral injuries, 8 had new onset subclinical electroencephalography abnormality as the initial documented sign of focal cerebral injury. The presence of focal cerebral injury versus not was associated with lower survival to decannulation, with a p-value equal to 0.007. Conclusions. In this single-center retrospective series from 2015 to 2023, the majority of ECLS-related focal cerebral injuries were evident within 48 hours of ECLS cannulation, decannulation, or circuit interruption. These events warrant increased surveillance for neurologic complications. Abstract 5 is a clinical investigation article by Aldewereld et al. Pediatric sepsis phenotype in a single-center cohort covering 2010 to 2020, evolution in day 1 to day 3 trajectory and potential prognostic value. Objectives: to examine the utility of day 3 sepsis phenotype classifications compared with day 1 and whether these could be reliably identified using routine clinical data on day 1. Design: retrospective cohort study of pediatric patients managed from 2010 to 2014 and 2018 to 2020. Setting: academic children's hospital. Patients, 1,828 children aged 1 month to 18 years old admitted to the PICU with suspected infection who received a minimum of 7 days of systemic antibiotics. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Subjects showed significant evolution of phenotype from day 1 to day 3, with 31.7 to 60.9% remaining the same type. Outcomes were worst in those classifying as type D on day 3, with mortality as high as 16.6% in those that were classified as type D on both days 1 and 3, as well as 11.3% in those initially classified as type C, or a lower mortality type, on day 1, but type D on day 3. Accurate statistical prediction of day 3 types using multinomial logistic regression and random forest and day 1 data was poor despite attempts to improve performance. Conclusions. In our retrospective cohort of patients with sepsis, we identified significant evolution in phenotype over the first 3 days of illness. Day 3 phenotypes may provide more accurate statistical prediction of outcomes, but identification of day 3 phenotypes using data available early in the course of illness is challenging. New methods will likely be required to improve performance in this area. Abstract 6 is a clinical investigation article by Janice et al. Early blood biomarkers and MRI injury after cardiac arrest, secondary analysis of the 2017 to 2020 personalized outcomes after child cardiac arrest study. Objectives: brain MRI is used to inform prognosis of pediatric cardiac arrest. We analyze the association between early levels of 4 brain injury biomarkers and pattern of brain injury on MRI. Design, setting, and patients. This secondary analysis of a multicenter prospective cohort study in 14 U.S. hospitals from May 16, 2017 to August 19, 2020 recruited children 48 hours to 17 years old who were resuscitated after cardiac arrest and had a brain MRI within 14 days post-arrest. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Brain MRI injury score was calculated as a sum of T2 and diffusion-weighted imaging lesions. We used the Kruskal-Wallis test to compare maximum biomarker values on days 1 to 3 between 3 categories of MRI injury severity: IDEST, no injury; mild to moderate injury; and severe injury. Maximum neurofilament light chain, or NFL, tubulin-associated unit, glial fibrillary acidic protein, and ubiquitin C-terminal hydrolase L1 levels were associated with severity of total injury, gray matter injury, and white matter injury. Using logistic regression, individual biomarker levels were associated with presence of injury on MRI after adjusting for age, presence of congenital heart disease, and severity of illness using pediatric index of mortality 3 score. Of 40 patients with injury on MRI and one-year outcome data, median NFL levels were higher in the 15 patients who died compared with the 21 patients with favorable outcomes, 7.1 picograms per milliliter with an interquartile range of 5.94 to 7.51 picograms per milliliter versus 5.1 picograms per milliliter with an interquartile range of 4.1 to 5.94 picograms per milliliter, log transformed, P less than 0.001, but we failed to identify a difference in levels between those with unfavorable outcomes with a Vineland adaptive behavior score less than 70 and an N equal to 4 versus favorable outcomes. Conclusions. Blood biomarkers measured early after injury are associated with MRI injury and may provide additional information for prognostication when incorporated in a multimodal evaluation. Abstract 7 is a clinical investigation article by DeMaio et al. Diabetic ketoacidosis and venothromboembolism, a North American Virtual Pediatric Systems Registry study from 2014 to 2023. Objectives: to estimate the occurrence rate of venous thromboembolism, or VTE, among critically ill children and young adults with diabetic ketoacidosis, or DKA, and evaluate putative prothrombotic risk factors using a multicenter data registry. Design: multicenter observational retrospective study utilizing a cohort derived from the Virtual Pediatric Systems Database from October 1, 2014 to December 31, 2023. Setting: 139 North American PICUs. Patients: critically ill children and young adults older than 30 days to younger than 21 years old with principal admission diagnosis of DKA, excluding neonates, post-cardiac surgical patients, and children with length of stay less than 1 day. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Of 21,549 encounters, 62 or 0.29% developed venous thromboembolism with a mean annual rate of 0.29% plus or minus 0.06%, and 32 of 62 or 55% were hospital-acquired venous thromboembolism. Patients with venous thromboembolism as compared to without experienced greater rates of sepsis, 43.6% versus 0.7%, cerebral edema, 17.7% versus 3.1%, central venous catheterization, 66.1% versus 3.8%, invasive mechanical ventilation, 46.8% versus 2.3%, and a greater length of stay, with a median of 4.9 days and an interquartile range of 2.6 to 12.2 days versus 1.4 days with an interquartile range of 1.1 to 1.9 days. All p-values were less than 0.001. Regarding DKA-specific prothrombotic risk factors, those with venous thromboembolism as compared to without had more severe acidosis, hyperglycemia, and reduced Glasgow Coma Scale scores. Those with venous thromboembolism had a median admission pH of 6.96 with an interquartile range of 6.82 to 7.13, while those without venous thromboembolism had a median pH of 7.07 with an interquartile range of 6.96 to 7.18. Those with venous thromboembolism had a median hyperglycemia level of 590 mg per deciliter with an interquartile range of 453 to 834 mg per deciliter, while those without venous thromboembolism had a median hyperglycemia level of 406 mg per deciliter with an interquartile range of 310 to 548 mg per deciliter. Those with venous thromboembolism had a median Glasgow Coma Scale score of 12 with an interquartile range of 6 to 14, while those without venous thromboembolism had a median Glasgow Coma Scale score of 15 with an interquartile range of 14 to 15. All p-values were less than 0.001. In an adjusted model, the presence of a central venous catheter and concurrent sepsis and/or infection were associated with venous thromboembolism. Presence of a central venous catheter had an adjusted odds ratio of 23.27 with a 95% confidence interval of 6.63 to 81.6 and a p-value less than 0.001. and concurrent sepsis and or infection had an odds ratio of 6.69 with a 95% confidence interval of 2.37 to 18.87. Conclusions. In this multi-center observational study of critically ill children and young adults hospitalized with DKA, the estimated occurrence rate of VTE was 0.29%, and, in an adjusted model, associated with central venous catheterization and concurrent infection and/or sepsis. Abstract 8 is the PCCM Conference Report and Expert Panel by Ferris et al. The PICU Data Collaborative, a novel, multi-institutional pediatric critical care dataset. The incidence of pediatric critical illness in the United States has been estimated at 3 per 1,000 children per year from 2001 to 2019, representing over 200,000 admissions per year. However, patients admitted to individual PICUs have a multiplicity and heterogeneity in diagnoses, conditions, comorbidities, and developmental stages, such that the prevalence of specific critical illness syndromes in any one unit remains low. For example, the point prevalence of sepsis in 2013 to 2014 and pediatric acute respiratory distress syndrome in 2016 to 2017 in North American PICUs was estimated at 7.7% and 3.5%, respectively. Patient populations with these syndromes are also heterogeneous. Hence, the ability of any one PICU to establish sufficiently large cohorts of patients for robust and generalizable clinical research is limited. Widespread electronic health record implementation and advances in data science present an opportunity to gather granular information about critically ill children. For example, the utility of multi-center collaborative research utilizing electronic health record data has been demonstrated by the Pediatric Emergency Care Applied Research Network Registry and the National COVID Cohort Collaborative. In both organizations, multiple sites submit granular electronic health record data to a central repository, facilitating the analysis of pooled patient-level data. Similarly, the large amount of data generated in modern critical care presents an opportunity to leverage data science tools, including artificial intelligence and machine learning algorithms, to interrogate clinical data sets. The output is potentially advantageous for our field, allowing for the development of prediction models, reclassification of syndromes into specific clinical phenotypes, sample enrichment with natural language processing, and integration of physiologic waveforms to develop a multidimensional picture of the dynamic trajectory of critical illness. Given all the above and the limitations of existing datasets for pediatric critical care data science applications, the PICU Data Collaborative, or PDC, was formed at a meeting in May 2019. Collectively, we identified the need to create a novel data resource specifically designed and scaled for artificial intelligence and machine learning applications. Now, in this conference and expert panel report for the journal, we provide an outline of the PDC and the projected research initiative in our current research sites around the United States. See www.pedsdata.org. We describe the process of forming the PDC and the methodology used to develop the initial 8-site de-identified pediatric critical care dataset. In addition, we present descriptive characteristics of the initial dataset and provide example variable distributions and descriptions. The PCCM narrative this month is by Dr. Mei Shum, entitled Just Take the 2 Minutes. In January, a medical jet transporting a pediatric patient crashed over Northeast Philadelphia 1 minute after takeoff. This tragedy was compounded by the knowledge that the patient had just recovered from life-saving treatment and was returning home to Mexico with her mother. At the time of the plane crash, I had been brainstorming a perspective piece inspired by qualitative interviews with families in our PICU. One mother had urged us to just take the 2 minutes, a small act to remind families and ourselves that they are worth our time. The crash shook the community of Philadelphia, and with it, my recognition of how much could happen in just 2 minutes. I was struck by how 2 minutes could hold both reassurance and uncertainty, hope and devastation. This poem seeks to explore the way time stretches across this fragile threshold between life and loss. Just 2 minutes to steady a mother's hands. She learns to trace a pulse, guide a feeding tube, a flush of saline and relief. 2 minutes before discharge papers are shuffled by the precarious air above between the solidity of hospital walls and a home turned unfamiliar. The weight of care, once heavy with burden, now an anchor. Suddenly, turbulence, within a metal evening sun, her mother's arms are a cradle. 2 minutes stretches wide enough for fear to be held, to be soothed, too brief to prevent its return. The embers of hope and recovery crackle in a fragile symphony of breathless laughter, quivering heartbeat, flashing monitor. A life lost before 2 minutes. A mother's hands, once steady, now reaching for empty weight. A child's story swallowed by the dawn, unwritten by smoke and ashes. This concludes the abstracts for the July 2025 issue of Pediatric Critical Care Medicine. Thank you very much for listening. For more journal-related content, including access to the articles mentioned in this recording, please visit pccmjournal.org. Members of the SCCM Pediatric Section receive complimentary access to the PCCM Journal.